This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than with any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Debates are debates, and there are plenty of debates happening in agriculture right now. Does China know that they made a deal? Will corn losses from the winter storm cut more than 250 million bushels from the crop? Do cinnamon rolls go with chili? Hey, guys, these are some heady times.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll talk with Ken Smithmeyer from Clipper Data, and then pro farmer editor Brian Grady checks in to talk markets and general happenings.
Right.
Maybe we can get him to weigh in on the cinnamon roll thing. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. I already had Brian weigh in on the cinnamon rolls and chili thing.
I hope at this hour of the day you started with the cinnamon rolls and left the chili for later, because we're in a confined space, if I must remind.
Hey, easy. So, yeah, it's evidently it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it started at school. My wife talks about it all the time. She works at a high school. All right. And they, every time they have chili, they serve cinnamon rolls.
Well, I thought you were just being random and sort of.
It's a thing.
Clever. It's a thing.
It's a thing.
This is news to this newsman.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
See, does it sound good to you?
No.
Sweet frosting and the whole works.
Yeah. I love them both. I love a good bowl of chili.
Yeah.
I love a nice, hot, tasty cinnamon roll.
Yeah.
Well,
let us know.
My evening is planned now, my friend.
Let us know, America. Cinnamon rolls with chili or no?
Okay.
Hashtag AgriTalk.
Now, are you suggesting, well, let's not belabor this, but are you suggesting we maybe, because so you can kind of unroll the cinnamon roll and you scoop it, maybe kind of.
I think people dip them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Simultaneous consumption.
Dude, I don't get it either.
These are heady times, my friend.
They are.
A bold new world.
They are, yes. And we've got Ken Smithmeyer from ClipperData.com coming up in
this
the next segment. It is a good conversation. I will guarantee that. We talk about what's going on with China and the shipment pace.
Very good.
And what should be expected on corn exports looking forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good conversation. And then it's a treat to have Brian Grady on the morning show.
It really is.
We haven't had him on the morning show for ever, man.
Long overdue.
Absolutely. So it's a great time to pick up the phone and give us a call starting at the bottom of the hour. It's 855 4 Talk Ag. That's 855-482-5524. All right.
All right.
Let's get to the news.
Well, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin commented on the progress of phase one of the trade deal with China, telling CNBC, quote, "We have a fundamental agreement. It is subject to documentation, and there's a lot of work to be done on that front." He said the deal includes very significant structural issues in agriculture, as well as the promise of purchases totaling around $50 billion of U.S. commodities. Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Rep Bob Lighthizer will conduct deputy-level talks as this week goes on. Sources say, however, the U.S. and China still face a wide divide on some of the larger issues. Meanwhile, the Chinese economy continues to deteriorate, with consumer prices rising 3% in September from the same time last year. The rise is supported by an 11.2% food price increase and a 69.3% increase in retail pork prices. Chip.
Yeah, keep going.
Are you paying attention over there?
I'm sorry. The easy way to get to $50 billion is $18 beans and $250 hogs.
Wow.
Wouldn't that make it easier?
$18 beans, Chip Flory.
That would make it so much easier.
Mexico's President Obrador has sent a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi urging passage of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. That was last week. He asked Pelosi to speed up the process. The letter came on the heels of a visit by House Democrats Democrats to Mexico last week. Of the letter, President Obrador said, quote, "There's agreement, and I took the opportunity to send Mrs. Pelosi a letter explaining that it's in the interest of the three peoples, the three nations, that this deal is approved." Now, Chip, lawmakers have suggested recently that with a bipartisan vote, the measure would pass, but a vote is not expected until late November or possibly into December.
Okay.
The World Trade Organization has granted approval for the United States to impose sanctions on the European Union to the tune of $7.5 billion in goods. The sanctions are tied to the EU's subsidies to aircraft manufacturer Airbus. While the EU contends the action is unfair, the U.S. pointed out the dispute has been going on for 15 years with no movement from the EU's side. Now, given the green light, the U.S. is expected to impose a 10% tariff on large commercial aircraft and a 25% tariff on ag and industrial goods. Yeah. Those duties go into effect October 18.
Right. Yeah. Another one is heating up, right?
It really
is. Another trade battle is heating up. This one, I mean, obviously the battle with China continues to rage on, but this is going to add a lot of fire to it if we get into a fight with Europe.
Well, and not unlike the China deal, this complaint, this gripe is starting to show its age just a little bit. 15 years now with no movement from the EU, so maybe it is about time we get something done. And finally, according to a monthly flash report from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, the sale of all tractors in the U.S. in September climbed 19% over the same time last year.
Yeah.
Combine sales increased 12% on the month, and in the first 9 months of the year, total combine sales increased 2%. Over the same period in 2018.
Yeah, I think we're going to try to get Ann Dignan on next week from J.P. Morgan to talk about that.
Oh, that'd be good. Get a little perspective
and some
on that.
And some of the trends, whether or not the sales pace, because that's a good one.
It really is.
If that sales pace is starting to attract some investment back into agriculture.
Okay.
So that's what I want to talk to Ann about.
You bet.
Yeah. Thank you, Davis.
That. Absolutely.
Annalisa Laca, editorial director, Farm Journal's Milk, joins us right now. First, you got to let us know, cinnamon rolls or no cinnamon rolls with your chili?
Listen, I grew up in the public school system, and I am so confused by the whole cinnamon roll chili situation. Like, I've never heard of that in my life.
Yeah.
Definitely separate chips.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. But you know what goes well with both? A nice glass of milk.
Yeah, there you go. Nice glass of milk. Chocolate, if we can.
Love it. Love it. All right. So we've been talking about the China trade deal and the African swine fever over there and the potential impacts on pork and beef demand. But there's some impacts, potential impacts on milk demand too, right?
Yeah, there is. So it's interesting, you know, as you know, depending on who you talk to and whether or not you believe the Chinese government, there's going to be quite an opportunity for them to rebuild their hog herd, as, you know, some estimates are as much as half of it has been decimated by African swine fever. And one of the things that is turning out to be a bright spot for dairy is whey permeate. So there's a lot of research that shows if you feed whey permeate to breeding age females, then it increases litter size.
Yep.
Also, whey products are known to promote faster growth in piglets. So there was a tariff on whey permeate with China, but on September 17th, that tariff was reverted. And so now it's back to the pre-retaliatory level of 2%. And so I do think that there is some good opportunity there. And, you know, the U.S. Dairy Export Council is really excited about this opportunity.
Yeah, it's amazing the tentacles on this story from African swine fever in China. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Annalisa, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Chip.
All right, that's Annalisa Laca with Farm Journal's Milk. Yeah, I love it. All right, coming up next, we've got Ken Smithmeyer from Clipper Data. .com right here on AgriTalk. We've heard a lot about how inexpensive herbicides just aren't worth the cost. In the end, you probably aren't saving what you think you are. Steve Gom, the corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, has another way of looking at it. He says it isn't just about what you save, it's about what you could lose. Steve, tell us what growers are at risk of losing.
First of all, by not using Acuron corn herbicide, growers may be leaving additional yield out there to the tune of 5 to 15 bushels because of tough-to-control weeds. And Chip, Acuron controls these tough weeds that other products are missing, so your corn crop isn't fighting for the nutrients, water, and sunlight, and it's able to develop to its full potential.
Yeah, you know, 5 to 15 bushels, that's a big difference. It has an impact on the grower's bottom line. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot more within our trials to understand further what it means to have consistent, effective weed control, especially those tougher to control weeds. And so when you have the opportunity to gain an additional 5 to 15 bushels and you look at a corn price, let's say, of roughly $3.70 a bushel, that's an additional $18 to $56 per acre. You spread that kind of return over multiple acres, it can really make a difference. So if you aren't using Acuron today, I really encourage you to talk to your local farm retailer to see what you might be leaving out there.
Yeah, and when you spread that out over what the average grower out there is somewhere around 300, 500 acres of corn, it really adds up in a hurry, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, it's been a tough market the last few years, and we really need to ensure that everybody's maximizing those yields and those returns.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It isn't about what you save. It is about what you could lose. Thank you. That was Steve Gomm from Syngenta talking to us about how Acuron gives growers 5 to 15 bushels more per acre. And after doing the math, it sure adds up.
Always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Protect diesel engines with premium Senex lubricants. Choose SuperLube TMS, a conventional heavy-duty diesel engine oil engineered to deliver protection for new, current, and older diesel engines. SuperLube TMS protects against soot, prevents sludge deposits, and slows oil thickening. The power needed to weather long hours and heavy, dusty road conditions. The power of Senex lubricants keeps engines running like a well-oiled machine.
Senex is a brand of CHS.
What do you call someone who studies the weather? A climatologist. What do you call someone who evaluates investments? A financial analyst. A person who studies DNA? A geneticist. A person who owns their own business? An entrepreneur. Who researches markets? An economist. And who handles employees? An HR manager. Someone who keeps devices up to date? A software technician. Someone who does business internationally, a global trader. Someone who transfers assets from one generation to the next, an estate planner. And someone who does all these things, you call them a farmer. Because being a farmer is the one job that requires dozens of other jobs. And at Pioneer, we're proud that our job is to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on Earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.
Feel confident every time you turn the key with a durable, dependable battery from John Deere. Ideal for riding lawn equipment, tractors, utility vehicles, pickup trucks, and just about anything else on four wheels. You can trust that your engine will fire up day after day with a reliable performance or strong box battery from John Deere. Better still, bring in your old battery at time of purchase and receive a recycle credit for the battery core from participating dealers. Learn more about battery choices at your local John Deere dealer.
You can't see them, but they're coming for your soybeans. Pythium, Phytophthora, and soybean cyst nematodes are serious threats, and they require serious seed protection. Valent USA has developed a 1-2-punch defense so growers can take the next step in soybean protection. Intego Sweet Soybeans has four powerful modes of action against insects and diseases that work in tandem with Aveo EZ Nematicide to stop soybean pests and diseases before they strike. Find out more at soybeanprotection.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Roxor, a side-by-side unlike any other.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. And we've got a bit of a treat for you. Ken Smithmeyer with ClipperData.com is our guest right now. And I love talking to Ken because when we talk to Ken, we're talking about actual data. We're not speculating. We're not guessing. We're not trying to figure out what is going on out there in the shipping world. We are talking actual data. Ken, thank you so much for making time for us.
Hi, Chip. Thanks for having me today.
You bet. You know, I tried to describe it there, but and this is you've been on before. We've talked about Clipper data, but I think it's important for people to understand exactly what it is, where you get information, and what kind of information it is, Ken. So explain that for us.
Sure. So what we're doing is we're collecting vessel lineups around the world. So in the global grain and oilseed market, you have all your mid and top tier players, U.S., South America, Black Sea. And we are taking that vessel lineup data, and then we're matching those boats up using satellite technology. And so we're tracking, we're seeing when that boat's loaded, what it's loaded with, and tracking that boat through its voyage to the ultimate destination. So because we're getting both points of the trade, we're able to see real-time trade flows, and we can produce research and forecast off that.
Very cool. I tell you, with the way that this trade is right now, Ken, and the amount of skepticism that is in place over the U.S.-China trade talks, that what you just said there, what is actually loaded and what is actually leaving the country, that's where it's at for this market going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, if you look at the course of the last, oh gosh, I'd say, what are we, 18 months in this trade war, almost 2 years, there's been a lot of promises from both sides, and a lot of conjecture. And frankly, you don't really know where any of that ends up until you see the boat leave the dock loaded with corn or soybeans or wheat, and then ultimately see it unload in the given destination that it was originally sold to. So, you know, when we hear about things, well, just take last week, for instance, headlines out there citing, you know, 20, 30 million tons of soybean purchases that our president is tweeting about. You really got to take that with a grain of salt and then look at the context of, you know, what's loading now, what's been loading, you know, put it in the context of timing. You know, we're not too far away from when we're going to see, you know, new crop Brazilian soybeans. That's 5 short months away. Time is real quick. So, yeah, it's important to see what actual shipments are, in addition to kind of complements the noise with export sales and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, have the trade talks changed how you do business, you know, what you're looking for in the data?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, yeah. You know, it's important to see if talks aren't going well and sentiment's poor and if talks have broken down, okay, then where are we shipping? You know, are we shipping more beans to Southeast Asia? You know, places like that. But also what's been very important is the African swine fever. And when we have, you know, global issues like that, they're not policy related, they're disease related. And then in the beef pork markets, you know, of course, when there's issues there, they impact the feed side of that. So, you know, when we sit here and say, you know, maybe China's gotten their issues with African swine fever figured out, maybe we're on kind of the downslope of that issue, which we think we are. You also have to say, all right, well, there's been reports of this in Eastern Europe. There's been reports of this in Vietnam. And, you know, I can look at, you know, Vietnam soybean offtake right now. In the first 6 months of 19, it was up 60%. But in the last 3 months, it's been down 6%. Wow. So that's a head scratcher. You say, okay, yep. Well, you know, maybe they had some soybeans bought before this issue really took hold, and they honored those commitments. But now, since they're done, they're kind of, you know, stepping back from the market to figure out just how deep their demand is. And if you look at things like the USDA, you know, they're projecting flat demand for Southeast Asia year over year for soybean imports. So you put those two pieces together. The real-time discharge data really gives you an idea of what those buyers are thinking and what their actions really mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So when it comes to China for the rest of 2019 and into 2020. And, you know, I want to ask you about that pork sale that was announced in the weekend at October 3rd, 123,500 metric tons. Is there anything in the booking data that would suggest that they're actually going to take shipment of most of that?
Hard to tell at this point.
Okay.
We're working on our containerized meat tracking data. And frankly, correct me if I'm wrong, I think a good chunk, if not most of that sale was for forward out shipment month. So, yep. You know, I think that, you know, look, I'm not going to sit here and get downbeat on the number just because it was a forward sale. I mean, a sale's a sale, but it's just something you need to earmark to watch for in the future, because
absolutely,
a lot of things can change, you know, from when that sale's made and when it's honestly shipped.
That's right. That is exactly right. What do you think we should expect from China going forward over the next 12, 18 months?
We're looking for a rebound, or at least I guess I'll start. We're looking for stabilization and then in hopes of a rebound. The fourth quarter here of their marketing year, which was July, August, September, their soybean imports are actually up 1 million tons from the prior year, which is we feel like a first good sign that things might at least be stabilizing. October imports of beans look robust here at the moment. You know, we're looking at boats on the water. They have an ETA of the end of the month. We think they're going to be better than October of last year, which came in, I think, just shy of 7 million tons. So we should have a steady to slightly higher number in October. You know, if you look at the African swine fever cases, that they have been on the downtrend. They're still reporting cases, almost on a weekly basis.
Yep.
But it just doesn't seem to be as big of an issue as what it was back in the summer.
Right.
So we think that China will start to take on a more normal pattern of buying. You know, but a lot of this is going to depend, you know, when we talk about it, step one is good to see them buying amounts that they did the year prior or 2 years prior. But, you know, then you have that supplier mix. Is it going to come from the United States? Is it going to come from South America? You know, and we feel like the U.S. has a good window to do quite a bit of business here between November and, let's say, early February. But after that, it's all going to depend on pricing. If Brazil is cheaper than the U.S., then they're going to take the Brazilian beans, whether we like it or not.
Right. Okay. Hey, on corn side of things, in the October supply and demand report, they took the 2019-20 corn export number from 20.05 down to 1.9 billion bushels. Any sign that corn demand is coming back?
Not in exports. You know, we issued a white paper here about a week or two ago that kind of said, hey, look, we're looking for exports to do a bit better here, kind of mid-late Q4. I'm patiently waiting for that to happen. I'll tell you one of the biggest shifts that I've seen in corn exports in a long time has been that we're doing half as much Latin American and Caribbean business as we typically do. Typically, that Latin American Caribbean region, which is, as we all know, is in our backyard, it can be about 1 million tons a month. And for the last 4 months, we've been doing half that. And that's a direct result of, yes, Brazil had big supply, but they have really worked out the efficiency problems that they used to have in those northern ports, and they've been able to supply a lot of tonnage to that area of the world that we should be getting. So until we start getting some of this demand that we should always get, which is the destinations that are very easy for us to ship to, they're short trips. I think we're going to have a hard time feeling real strong about corn demand on the export side. I wouldn't expect any Chinese business Ukraine's going to take care of a lot of that.
Right.
Ukraine's also going to take care of a lot of Mediterranean and European business.
Yep.
The bread and butter for the U.S. is going to be Caribbean and Asia region.
Very cool. Ken, we got to go. I could talk to you all day. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thanks very much.
All right. That is Ken Smithmeyer, ClipperData.com. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
Feel confident every time you turn the key with a durable, dependable battery from John Deere. Ideal for riding lawn equipment, tractors, utility vehicles, pickup trucks, and just about anything else on four wheels. You can trust that your engine will fire up day after day with a reliable performance or strong box battery from John Deere. Better still, bring in your old battery at time of purchase and receive a recycle credit for the battery core from participating dealers. Learn more about battery choices at your local John Deere dealer.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, there's a lot of debate out there right now over just how much damage was done to the corn crop, but corn market doesn't seem too concerned about it.
Not at the moment. We're down about a penny or two here. So not heavy selling pressure by any means, but definitely not seeing buyers run in and show a lot of concern. I think it's more of a wait and see. And honestly, it's going to take until combines roll to have any kind of a really assessment of damage after the storms.
Right, right. Soybeans aren't that worried either, and I honestly would be more concerned about the soybean crop than I am corn.
You know, I'm actually a little bit encouraged here by the soybean trade so far. We backed her off, and now we're just showing fractional to penny gains in most of the contracts, but at least it isn't lower. So we'll see where we finish. I hit that one hard usually, as the finish is way more important than where we're trading mid-morning.
Got some pressure on wheat here today, too.
Yeah, I think I've talked about it. Wheat just really needs to go with the corn market, and today with corn lower, wheat's struggling to find buyers, and I think that'll continue to be the theme moving forward.
Got some solid gains in lean hogs.
Yeah, so the Chinese purchases, saying they're out there with 700,000 metric tons of pork purchases. Those numbers don't line up with what USDA is giving us at the moment. But I think that has some impact. We know that China needs U.S. pork, and they're going to continue to be an aggressive buyer.
A little bit of I'd like to see some spillover into the cattle, but not much happening there.
No, just waiting on cash trade to develop there. And we've seen weeks now of higher cash trade. We want to see if that'll continue on this week.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Stick around. You're up in the next segment. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Hey, Davis.
Yeah.
You know, everybody needs a friend, Sparky.
Okay.
Everybody does.
Sure, yeah.
Absolutely.
I've got a couple Sparkies.
Hi, Sparky.
Yeah.
Sparky just sent me a message.
Okay.
She says, just an FYI, Runza Restaurants have a chili and cinnamon roll specialty. I've not had them, but I do have relatives that absolutely love it.
We've got Brian Grady, Pro Farmer's premier carnivore, here with us.
That's true.
Now, I like to throw a little ground beef in with my chili here. Brian Grady, your thoughts on chili with cinnamon rolls?
Well, I love chili.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love cinnamon rolls.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I do not eat them together.
See? We're the same way.
Yeah.
And guys, is it a Nebraska thing? I mean, if it's Runza, if they're serving it at Runza restaurants, I'm guessing it's a Nebraska thing.
Would you, could you, in a combine, would you, with a goat? I'm just throwing that out there. Food for thought.
I don't. I'm not sure either.
Yeah.
I'm not sure on that.
I was really thinking fast for an animal that rhymes with combine too. Yeah. I couldn't do it.
Ermacher, let us know if it's a Nebraska thing. I guess it might be. How you doing, Beach?
Good.
Good. It's good to have you on the morning show. It's been a long time. So we're not going to focus too much on the markets. I just want to focus on the issues that are impacting the markets. We just wrapped up a conversation with Ken Smithmeyer from Clipper Data. And at the end of that conversation, we were talking about corn demand. He doesn't see a whole lot in the data that is suggesting that we're going to see a recovery in corn export demand in the near term. USDA last week's supply and demand report took that export estimate from 2.05 down to 1.9, took 150 million bushels off it. That's a heck of a cut this early in the year.
Yeah, it's really lean. You know,
yeah.
It just got done looking at the inspections numbers. They were delayed today because of yesterday's Columbus Day holiday. 69% behind a year ago. I mean, it's really, really poor, very poor start to the year. So, you know, some of that is justified, definitely taking off the exports, but it's really lean at this point in time. I mean, if we're going to go sub 1.9 billion bushels on corn exports, wow. I mean, that's just incredible. And you think about it, and Ukraine's going to export more corn. Argentina, we think, will continue to export more corn. Brazil, you know, so we're getting South American competition.
Yep, that's what
Black Sea competition, and it really does put us in a bind. And I think that, you know, the past year we've been thinking about soybean exports because of the tariff war with China and all that stuff.
Right.
And actually, the soybean exports, they've kind of kicked her in. They started way behind, but they're performing better than corn is right now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it feels to me that if we had some help from the corn export side of things, what happened up in the Dakotas and parts of Minnesota over the weekend would be having a bigger impact on the markets than what it is.
Oh, I think definitely.
Yeah.
Because you need some demand pull, and it can't all be supply scare stuff.
Right.
Especially when you're not going to know the impacts of the supply scare, the supply impact from that storm until later. So
right.
The market has no urgency right now because they have demand to fall back on. The demand tells them not to get too concerned.
Right. I'm not exactly sure, as long as we're talking about the storm, I'm not exactly sure where the 250 million bushel number came from. But that seems to be the line that people are playing with and taking the over or the under on damage caused by the winter storm up in the Dakotas and Minnesota and some other areas as well. But and we're talking about specifically to the corn crop here. There's no way of knowing right now, is there?
Absolutely no way of knowing.
Right.
And let's just say that magically the 250, I mean, it's nothing more than the flag on the tug of war rope at
right.
this point in time.
Good. Hey, there you go.
But let's just say magically that happens to be the number.
Right.
you know, we're either a little bit above it or a little bit below it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the case may be. That's a pretty significant cut to ending stocks that are now sub 2 billion bushels.
Yep. And the other thing is, we're having a debate about something that we'll never know for sure.
Right. The corn's going to go into the bin.
It wasn't measurable to begin with.
Right.
You know, we had an idea of what it was going to be. If it comes in 250 million bushels below that, do we say that it was lost to the storm? Or was it lost to the fact that we had a crappy 2019 growing season?
And what's going to happen is the corn's going to go into the bin wet.
Yeah.
It's going to give the false impression that yield was bigger than what it was.
Yep.
We're going to get to either next spring or next summer, and magically, we aren't going to have as much corn as what we thought we had, because
right.
it's going to, you know, a bushel of corn doesn't equal a bushel of corn, or won't equal a bushel of corn.
Right, right.
And you're going to have the dry down factor when it's in the bin, and you're going to have loss because it was in the bin wet, and all the other things.
And keep piling it on.
Yes, and we're going to magically end up with less corn next spring yep. and or summer, whenever it happens in one of those grain stocks reports. And everybody's going to be like, well, the crop wasn't as big as it was. Well, the crop was what it was when you put it in the bin. It just didn't come out the same equivalent as when it went into the
yep.
bin.
2009 all
yes,
over again.
It
dude.
Is. It,
2009 yeah, all over
erase
again.
Erase the zero and put a one in there.
And think, guys, if you want to see some of the most unpredictable grain stocks reports, look at those grain stocks reports that were delivered in 2010. Because we had a terrible time measuring that 2009 crop.
Yeah, in all likelihood, DEIS 1 corn stocks are going to be heavier than what the market thinks.
Yep.
Then they're going to start surprising to the downside,
yep.
especially by the time you get to June and September.
Lose 300 million bushels in June.
Yeah, and where'd it go?
Right.
Well, the reasons that I just gave you is where it went. It just
right.
It's a matter of it has to play itself out.
Okay. All right. So let's answer another one of the questions from the open of the show. Does China know that they made a deal with the U.S. on trade?
Well, I'm not sure, but Trump's Mandarin probably isn't real good. I'm just going to go out on a limb here.
Yeah.
And the English, or the Chinese, their English is probably better than Trump's Mandarin.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
And I don't know, but there's translation lost somewhere in there. It's the same thing. You go back to May, and didn't we
yeah.
have this deal in place already?
I hope to God it is not the same thing that happened in May.
Right, because at that point in time, the Chinese went back to Beijing and said, oh, geez, what's yeah. on, you know, what they want to put on paper isn't what we thought we agreed to.
Exactly.
And so hopefully, like
See,
you said, hopefully. And this is phase one. Keep that in mind.
I do believe that back in May, when the Chinese delegation went back to Beijing, that the U.S. negotiators thought we had a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Mnuchin thought we had a deal. Lighthizer thought we had a deal. They went back, put it on paper, and they said, wait a second. This isn't right. There's no enforcement in it. This time around, they're talking about some of the things that were left out and in that agreement in May. Some of the enforcement. We've got the some of the intellectual property rights issues are being solved because you don't have to partner with a company now, supposedly.
Right.
Supposedly. But they were talking about some of those things, and the vice premier is standing right next to him. I wouldn't expect the vice premier to have a disagreement with President Trump in front of God and everybody, but I would have expected that if there was a problem, we would have heard something very specific from Liu He by now.
You would think so. I mean, this all came out in, you know, the state-run papers and blogs and things like that. So I think that there's some truth to it. I also think that the Chinese are getting closer to a deal with us,
yeah.
and the sides are, you know, it's narrowing in here, and we're getting closer. We'll see. The next month here is very critical because they have to write it. They have to put it down on paper, and they have to get both sides to sign it, this phase one.
Okay. Phase one, is it a big deal?
Well, for agriculture, it is.
Yeah.
The broader things that Trump really wanted to attack on, mm-hmm. you know, the intellectual property rights and the human rights and those types of things, I don't know if we'll ever get those solved because there's a fundamental divide there that's just so great.
Right.
But I think agriculture can come out just fine out of this deal. If we get phase one done and if there's a little bit more in phase two that pushes them down the road. But to get the Chinese to say, well, we're going to agree to buy $40 to $50 billion of U.S. Yeah. ag goods over the 2-year period and then enforcing it and holding them to it.
Yeah.
And it's all dependent. I mean, when they're not giving us a volume that they're buying.
Right.
They're giving us a dollar amount. Well, that changes every day with the price of corn and soybeans and pork. And
the comment I made to Davis was it's a whole lot easier to get to those dollar amounts if you got $18 beans and $250 hogs.
Yeah. they wouldn't have to buy nearly as much at that point in time.
Right.
I don't think we won't see those prices.
Right.
But... yeah, definitely. And it would be way easier to enforce if it was a volume.
Yeah.
We're going to buy X million metric tons of soybeans. Yeah. We're going to buy X million metric tons of whatever.
See, and I just got to say this. I don't think he did himself any favors in making the announcement with some of the things that he was saying about agriculture. You know, get out there and buy more land, buy bigger tractors, get ready to work overtime.
Yeah, he
didn't help himself.
No, he has a tendency to say stuff that, like,
right.
And honestly, he gets going so much. I think at the end, after he listens to it, he's probably like in the bowels of the White House. He's probably like, man, I kind of wish I didn't say it that way. He would never admit to it,
right?
But that's very Trumpian.
Yeah. Very Trumpian. Love it. Brian, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. Really appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. There, we've answered the questions that we asked at the start of the show. Mm-hmm. But we've got more on this whole chili and cinnamon roll thing. It's coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Spend 3 days focused on building your dairy business at Milk Business Conference, November 11th through the 13th, 2019, in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. New this year, Hemp College is being co-hosted with Milk Business Conference. Find reliable sources to answer all your hemp questions and the latest information on agronomic best practices. Register for both events at milkbusinessconference.com.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. Every spring, we hit my fields together at the first sight of green. 6 weeks later, he's out here again, checking roots, stalks, soil like they were his own. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. Nutrients, weed control, pests, disease. He gets an agronomist to weigh in whenever we need a second opinion. The whole time using the latest technology to document where we've been and decide where we're going. Wheels always turning. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. That, my friends, is what they call seedsmanship at work. Look, anybody can sell you seed, only a Channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots. Always read and follow Grain Marketing and all of their stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Avoid getting left in the dark or in the cold this fall with auxiliary lighting and cold start packages from John Deere. Now through October 31st, 2019, receive 15% off forward and rear work lights, LED lighting, light guards, and engine and transmission heating accessories when you purchase two or more of these versatile attachments for your 1 through 5 series compact or utility tractor. Save at your local John Deere dealer today. Dealer participation may vary. Some restrictions apply. Offers end October 31st, 2019.
Land, family, good weather. All a farmer needs for the simple life. Just a field, a family, sunshine, and rain. And a drone for digital imaging. And software to run geospatial analysis. And a commercial driver's license for heavy equipment. And a spreadsheet program to help maximize your return on investment. And an understanding of genetics, biology, economics, climatology, banking, global market prices, land lease negotiation, engineering, and HR management. Oh, and estate planning, so you can pass this so-called simple life onto your kids. At Pioneer, we're proud to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on Earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.
Protect diesel engines with premium Senex lubricants. Choose SuperLube TMS, a conventional heavy-duty diesel engine oil engineered to deliver protection for new, current, and older diesel engines. SuperLube TMS protects against soot, prevents sludge deposits, and slows oil thickening. The power needed to weather long hours and heavy, dusty road conditions. The power of Senex lubricants keeps engines running like a well-oiled machine.
Senex is a brand of CHS.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Hey, we've got some responses here trying to settle the debate on chili and cinnamon rolls. Do they go together or not?
Yes.
New one in from Ken in Kansas.
Okay.
All right. Chip, you hit the nail on the head with the markets. It's going to take a while for the market to realize there's not as much corn available. Lock the bin door.
Okay.
That's all he had to say. There's nothing in here about chili and cinnamon rolls.
Nothing about the chili?
Nothing.
Thing?
I might block him.
That's no help at all.
I might block him.
Yeah, yeah. We're trying to do a show here for crying out loud.
Thank you, Ken. And I think he's...
I think he's right.
I think he's absolutely right. I mean, like Brian just said, watch that June stocks report.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to wait all the way until the June stocks report. Get halfway, three quarters of the way through the 2019-20 marketing year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we will probably get the first very solid clue of how much the NAS number might be off in the January annual production summary.
Well, and here's the thing. And Brian, I felt like, brought up a great point. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, when he was talking about the level of accountability is different if you're talking dollars or if you're talking bushels. And as I was reading, getting ready, writing the news for this morning's show, I'm seeing Mnuchin's comments. I'm seeing all the comments about the deal, even comments from China. One word escapes the entire commentary, and that's enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
We're coming down to accountability issues here.
Right.
And it just seems like enforcement, and I'm sure that there are clauses and things, and maybe they're just not focusing on it in what gets down the news pipe. But.
And when you go back to May, enforcement was a big deal.
It was.
We were talking about it all the time. So what I'm wondering is if this time around, the U.S. side has decided, listen, we're going to take this deal. We're not going to talk about enforcement, but we're going to take this deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as we start talking about enforcing something on China, that's when they're going to get their hair, the hair on the back of their neck up and say, no, no, we are not going to put that on paper.
That's exactly right.
So, yeah. And this is something that, I mean, you were losing your mind back in May over the enforcement stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. I'm a little hesitant to even read this because I'm not sure I can.
Yeah, there's been a gag reflex in play here.
Right. I think what I'm going to do is read it really quick. But this is from N.E. Iowa Farmer at N.E. Iowa Farmer. And, you know, he put it out there, so I'm just going to go. This is the first response to whether or not chili and cinnamon rolls go together. Mm-hmm. At N.E. Iowa Farmer says, my family makes lettuce and Miracle Whip sandwiches to dip in our chili.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Boy. Boy.
I don't know. Okay, at Big Sky Farm, her, you know her. She is Michelle Jones up in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
She says, what is wrong with your guys' childhood, Chip, Lori Davis, Michelson, and B. Grady? Chili and cinnamon rolls are a school menu staple, and it's phenomenal. At H.C. Kangas.
Really?
At H.C.C. Angus. Wow.
I think maybe it is Kangas.
It's not. It's at H.C.C. Angus. Wow. Okay, from just south of the cities in Minnesota, where we ate chili and cinnamon rolls separate, moved to northeast Iowa and was told you eat them together. I don't get it. Okay.
Now, see, here's the thing.
Okay, you got one over there?
I've got one here.
Okay.
Well, no, you already read that one. My thing is, I've seen cinnamon rolls served.
Yes.
I've seen chili served.
Yes. How do you do it?
Never at the same time.
I mean, are you putting a cinnamon roll in the bottom of the bowl and dumping the chili over the top? Is that what you're doing with this?
I don't know if that's how you do it. And then do you forego like the cheddar cheese and the sour cream that goes into the
well,
chili too?
Well, then I can't be doing that.
Maybe sprinkle a little bacon on top?
At K. Neb Husker. All right. Mm-hmm. Yes, Runza serves chili and cinnamon rolls, very popular, but I grew up with them in the public school lunch in grade school in the 60s,
uh-huh.
long before and far from Runza, which was only in Lincoln then. At Justin Faster,
yep.
Northwest Iowa, he says, yes, they go together, and evidently Snoop Dogg
brings
agrees.
In the Snoopy Dizzle.
Yep,
big guns.
Snoop Dogg agrees.
Big guns.
At Harrison Cray. Says chili cinnamon rolls always been a staple in Southwest Kansas, like peanut butter and jelly. It just goes together.
You know what? I'm crying foul. No.
At Aaron's Farms Beef, chili and cinnamon rolls is not just in Nebraska. We love it in Illinois, too.
Here's what you're going to do, America.
I am shocked by all of this.
You get you a cinnamon roll, you box it up, you wrap that in $20 bills.
Yeah?
You get a bowl of chili, wrap that sucker. You can wrap that one in tens.
Okay.
Send it. To Sparkle City Studios, care of Pro Farmer. We're going to have a taste test. We'll do it on the air.
We are.
Send us some chili and cinnamon rolls, would you?
We are definitely going to be trying this. You know, it is too much fun. Okay, what do we got going the rest of the time?
Geez, I don't know. USMCA, Mexico is pushing hard on Pelosi.
Right.
I'd like to see that happen, but now they're talking late November, early December for a vote.
You know it's into 2020.
Mm-hmm.
At least,
mm-hmm.
if they do it before the election. That's my attitude. Now, 90% of the people that I talk to about this, in full disclosure, mm-hmm. say that it's false, that I'm wrong on this, that it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
And you wouldn't mind being wrong on that.
Oh, I would You'd be prefer. Happy,
yep.
happy to pay off every bet
mm-hmm.
that I have made on this. But I contest that Pelosi... and her party have no desire
mm-hmm.
to give President Trump a win of any sorts.
Right.
Of any sorts while this impeachment is going on.
And that goes all the way from USMCA all the way down to the cold side of the pillow is better.
Yeah.
Nope.
No. No. Those that disagree with me, and like I said, it's about 90% of the people that I talk to, say no, Nancy Pelosi is going to use a USMCA vote to show that they can still legislate in the House during the impeachment proceeding.
Question.
Yes.
If it does happen late November, early December, before the 2020 elections even.
Yes.
Will you eat lettuce with Miracle Whip on it dipped in chili?
No, I will not.
You won't?
No, I will not.
We'll find something.
That is not going to be part of the taste test.
We'll find something.
I'm not going down that path. I will try the cinnamon rolls and the chili, but that's where it's going to end. All right. Thank you for listening today. Thanks, Donna Lisa Locke, Kent Smith-Meyer, Brian Grady. Got to come back this afternoon. Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net. And tomorrow, Sean Haney is in. Davis.
All right.
And Sean will have a farmer forum.
AgriTalk.
Some of us were born to farm. Some diesels, like Cenex Premium Diesel, were born to fuel. Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn to reduce particulate matter and keep filters cleaner for longer. Fuel your equipment like a pro with Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster and leave typical number 2 diesel to the amateurs. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Cenex is a brand of CHS.
Feel confident every time you turn the key with a durable, dependable battery from John Deere. Ideal for riding lawn equipment, tractors, utility vehicles, pickup trucks, and just about anything else on four wheels. You can trust that your engine will fire up day after day with a reliable performance or strong box battery from John Deere. Better still, bring in your old battery at time of purchase and receive a recycle credit for the battery core from participating dealers. Learn more about battery choices at your local John Deere dealer.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.